is the president of the corporation. And other people are going to give written testimony, but he's there right now and he'd like to make a statement.
Fine.
You can hang up now because...
Are you ready?
Okay, Mary?
Yes?
Hello, Mary?
Yes?
Go ahead, Mary.
Hello?
Yes, you speak, Mary.
Hello?
Hello, Justine?
If I...
Hi, Justine?
Oh, there you are, Mary. I thought perhaps we had disconnected. Yes, right here. I'm ready.
Okay, I'm going to hand this over to Tom, okay? This is Tom Berger.
Okay.
The commissioner.
All right.
Yeah. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, Mr. Gunderson, Tom Berger speaking here at Sand Point, and I'm glad we got you on the line. We'll just treat this as a part of our hearing here at Sand Point, and glad to give you an opportunity to participate.
Yes, hello, Mr. Berger. Just looking at a newsletter from a fan here on 1991 retreat and possible solutions. I believe that's the issue we're...
Right, right. Yes, I'd be pleased to have your comments.
Yes, I'm not too well prepared on really making a statement. I'm looking at the ideas here. Number one was eliminate the 1991 provision which called for unrestricted stock to be issued January 1992.
Yeah.
I feel that their ideas are very well put together. Let's see.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Gunderson. We've had a meeting here today with some of the people from Sand Point, and we've been talking about the whole business of the restrictions on the sale of shares, what's to happen to the land, the question of taxation of Native Corporation lands after 1991, business of the children born since 1991 and their right to have shares, and the whole question of which comes up at every village, whether or not the best solution is to simply have the corporations transfer the land to the IRA governments or traditional councils or to a native trust of some kind. Anyway, maybe you could just tell me how you feel about the question of what's most important in all this, keeping the land in native hands or giving people the right to, in some way, to sell their shares after 1991. How do you feel?
I feel that the stock should be kept in native hands. That's my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And also on the land, I think that we should also have the option to hold on to that. I don't feel that taxation is fair. They give us so much land, and then if they tax us by non-payment, that they would we would lose that land. I don't feel that's... I think that's detrimental to the future of the native people. And without the land and the chance to use the land, I think the whole thing would be... I feel it's a farce.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they give us something, and then by some hook or crook, they take it away. I don't feel it. Mm-hmm.
I believe, sir, that you're the president of your local village corporation. Is that right? Oh, the village council.
I'm the village council president.
Right.
My son, we call him Butch Gunderson. He's also Paul Gunderson. We call him Butch. is the corporation president.
Oh, right. Sorry. Well, can you tell me whether you have any idea how most of the shareholders in the local village corporation feel about these questions? Do you think they share your views
about the act as it is now?
Yeah, how do they feel it's worked out? Are they happy with it, or are they concerned about 1991? Have they even thought about the question whether or not they want to sell their shares, or are they concerned about the land falling into the hands of outsiders?
I don't think it had been aired enough here to, we haven't had discussions on it as a group, and I think just within the last 6 months or so that we've seen this issue brought up on TV, but I don't know if it's been it's really sunk home yet to the majority of the stockholders.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think with more TV viewing and programs like that, I think it'll bring home the point at one time here, so that people will be talking about it more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But up until this point, it hadn't been discussed as a group.
Yeah.
That I know of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, any other observations to make?
Well, I think that, let's see, I'm looking at the rest of the ideas. I think the buyback of voting, let's see, what houses, the shares, and by the corporation, I think that's a good thing. And the benefit to the elders, although I haven't heard too much about it, I think it would be a good thing also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And another thing, I think 1991, I think that date should be extended so that people are just, I think they're just now realizing just how much we stand to lose as it stands right now. And I think down the road we should get some way to retain our land.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not lose it.
Right. Mary's here with me. Do you have any questions you'd like to bring up, Mary?
I don't. The only thing that I would ask is maybe for the record you could tell us a little bit about Nelson Lagoon and what the main economy there is and how many shareholders there are and how the Village Corporation and the Village Council are working either together or what your different roles are and kind of that kind of thing.
We have 54 stockholders here, and the corporate board and the council board consist pretty much of the same members. We don't have too many that can be easy to get on the board.
Mm-hmm.
The board. What was your other question?
Is Nelson Lagoon pretty much a fishing community? Is that the main way that people make a living?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's strictly fishing. We don't have any industry of any type. It's just seasonal.
Mm-hmm. Is the corporation involved in any kind of fishing ventures, or how is the corporation?
No, we're not into any business, fishing ventures, processing or otherwise.
How is the
this point?
Mm-hmm. Is the corporation doing anything, or is it mainly investments?
No, other than just to draw an interest on the money that
mm-hmm.
That was set aside for us or allocated to us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, when the village was making its land selections, how did you choose your lands? What did you look for in choosing your lands?
Well, it was a hard decision. We had a committee of 9 members, and we got together, and I think what we looked at was shoreline. We took all the shoreline around Nelson Lagoon, and then we followed the Caribou River and Sapsuk River.
Mm-hmm.
And also went into Herndon Bay as far as we could.
So that's pretty much for fishing reasons.
We didn't have any guidelines. It was hard to make a decision what land to pick. We tried to avoid swamps that we which we knew were there, and we felt it wouldn't be utilized in any way,
mm-hmm.
other than maybe for game.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly nesting areas for birds, waterfowl, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Are all the shareholders for Nelson Lagoon living in Nelson Lagoon?
Not all, but I would say at least better than 2/3 are here.
Mm-hmm. And the others are scattered in lots of places.
Yes. There's some in Naknek, and there's a couple in Bellingham.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that gives us an idea, and that's all I can think of. I'm going to pass you over to Tom again.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Gunderson. Sorry you couldn't make it over here, but this is certainly the next best thing. And if you have any further thoughts, just write to us at our address in Anchorage. We'd sure like to hear from you.
Yes, okay, Mr. Berger. Just one thought on the afterborn. I think that's what they're called.
Yeah.
I think that they should be included.
Right.
And get some benefit from the Claims Act along with the rest of the native people.
Yeah, well, everywhere I've gone, and I've been to about 30 villages and towns now, that's everybody pretty much agrees with you on that point. And I think they also pretty much agree with you about hanging on to the land. It's interesting, our discussion here this afternoon at Sand Point some of the people said, as an American, I should have the right to sell my shares anytime I want to anybody who wants to buy them. But then when they thought about it and realized the implication might be that the land would be taken over by outsiders, they thought again. Anyway, it's good to have talked to you. Anything else you'd like to add?
I agree with what you're saying on the land. I think that if we lose the land, I think that's all what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
We need to hold on to that. Without land, I think we could have big problems.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much then, sir.
Oh, yes, I'm glad to have a chance to comment on this. And thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, I hope to meet you one of these days.
Yes, I look forward to that, too.
Okay.
And we'll try to get in more written testimony to back up and maybe be a little more concise about some of these things.
Good. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Berger.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you know how to...
Did you do an audio conference with us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine. I think not.
It was Paul Gunderson. Wasn't it at Nelson Lagoon?
Yeah,
after we adjourned this afternoon, I had a telephone conference with Paul Gunderson of Nelson Lagoon, and he made his observations over the telephone.
David Osterbach. when I was speaking to him, asked me to pass on one suggestion. He...
Do you want to sit in front of the microphone?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you want to start a meeting?
All right, well, I can start it, and people here are veterans of this affair now, so nothing further need be said by me.
When I was talking to people in town yesterday and the day before, a lot of people were going to be leaving and wouldn't be in town, and they gave me all these things. Most of them were already covered, but David Osterbach had mentioned that he would like to see the federal government offer homestead land here on the Aleutian Chain, not just up in the Matanuska Valley or up there, and to attach to that, say, a 10-year or more residency as a way for people here to get individual land. And at the moment, that's the only suggestion that I can think of, and that from my notes that hasn't been brought up.
Well, do any of you have any thing to add since we adjourned this afternoon? Well, maybe we should give them a little while. Miss again. I think you've summed it up very well.
I can't say anything. I'm very extemporaneous.
Mr. McCullum, you were discussing the difference between an ordinary corporation and...
Yes, I mentioned that a native corporation... A native corporation is unique, not like a private corporation, IBM, for example, or big corporations in the United States. When a man gets to be 65 or 70 and he wants to retire, he just sells out. If he wants to pass it on to his heirs, that's fine. Whatever he does has no bearing on his community, on his neighbors, whereas in Sandpoint or Perryville, Nelson Lagoon, if we were to sell, then we might call them aliens, foreigners, people uninterested in the environment, not necessarily uninterested, but probably interested only in money. Whereas we were born here, and this is our land. So I would extend on that and say that we have a different situation. We should not sell without regulations or provisions whereby this land would be retained by the community, by the people here.
Thank you. Yes.
Could
we have your name for the record?
Can this be off the record? It doesn't matter. My name's Tammy Stuckey, and I work for the Aleutian Pribilof Island Association. And before I started working at APIA, they had the Unangan Unity Conference, where they brought in people from all over the region to Alyeska and had it like a three-day conference to discuss the 1991 issue. And I was just curious if anybody from the Shumagin Corporation had attended that. Because during the break, what happened was I ran down and I reread the newsletter article. We had a special newsletter article on it. And it identified kind of regional concerns about the 1991 issue and where they'd like to see what direction they'd like to see the region head in to kind of head off the 1991 time boundary line. And I've seen the videotape and whatnot, but I didn't know if the Shumagin Corporation had had any input in that, or if there was anybody from Sandpoint.
Dick Jacobson. Maybe one more person. Do you know who went, Hubert?
I didn't hear
who went to the meeting at Alyeska last winter? Dick and one more person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know who, but it was attended by Shumagin people.
I mean, there were a number of different issues that seemed to come up in at that conference and have come up here. And I just thought that might be worthwhile information if you're looking for what regionally the people are thinking.
Well, what are you thinking?
I should probably brought the information up. It's just there were some other concerns that seemed to come up, and I was thinking if anybody attended the conference that was here, they might be able to interject some of the other ideas, just because we seem to have come to kind of a stalemate on what direction people want to head.
Yeah. Well, have you any views about what direction people should take?
Yeah. I personal views, sure. But as I'm not Native and I'm not a member of the corporation, I'm not sure they're relevant views.
Well, we've heard from a lot of people who aren't shareholders.
Okay. I see the 1991 issue as real crucial to the Native population, an issue of land. And just from an outsider's perspective, I'd like to see the unity maintained and the land remain in the shareholders' hand. And I think it gets real scary if you can say that people can sell their shares in 1991, because I think a lot of people will. And I think that you'll lose. I think the Native people will lose a whole lot by that division.
How long have you been working for APIA?
Since February.
In what capacity?
As the, what's my job title? Substance Abuse Community Education.
Here in Sandpoint?
I'm based in Sandpoint, and I serve four other communities.
And does APIA represent people throughout the Aleutian Pribilofs region?
We attempt to. Mm-hmm. One of the main issues that I think APIA right now, their stance on the 1991 issue, is to try and promote education of what the whole issue is about. As an agency, I think we'd like to see unity maintained so that the shares wouldn't be sold off and the land divided. But I can't say for sure as an organization what we think, but primarily we'd like to see more education and more regional cooperation, because it's so hard in this region where everybody's so divided.
Divided by geography, you mean?
Yeah.
Or divided in other ways?
Well, I think the geography leads to a whole lot of isolation in a whole lot of different ways. It's real difficult to do anything as a regional program here. But if anybody here is interested, that videotape of the conference is available to any of the communities if they're interested. It's an hour-long videotape of what went on at Alyeska and the different concerns that were expressed by different people from the region, from different communities. And we're really pushing for communities to watch it and maybe start thinking about the issue more and more.
Salvin Osterbay, are they taking any steps, the Pribilof Association, to stop the sale?
What we tried to do, and I'm fairly new, so most of this went on prior to when I was hired, but But the conference was held to try and get input as to what the people's next step would be, because it has to come from within the communities. We couldn't have a follow-up conference because it was too expensive. We brought in people from all over the region, and we had a special grant to do it. So what they tried to do was to get the employees educated as far as facilitating meetings along this line in each of the communities. And I went through the training for facilitation and to try and get communities thinking about what direction they want to head. You know, and then from there it's kind of up to the communities to decide or the region to decide.
Well, what I understand is, you know, the bill is passed that they can sell out in 91. And if there's nothing done by legislation in Congress or through the state, that's just the way it'll go.
Now, I was real confused because when people were talking earlier about ways to stop that from happening, I talked to Mary yesterday, and I thought you'd given me some other alternatives than the ones that you mentioned. Maybe I'm wrong.
What were you thinking of?
Like, you talked about the land bank as one possibility, and you talked about...
Tom can talk about that, various trusts and land banks and other kinds of arrangements.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole range of possibilities, but I have spent my time, as we did this afternoon, trying to find out what's really on people's minds. If I start offering solutions, then everybody can have a great time examining them, but except by their reactions to them, we don't really know what they think. But there are any number of possibilities, but they all seem to come back to the idea of separating the land from the corporations in one way or the other. And that keeps coming up. I don't know whether that's essential, but if you look at any of these possibilities, they all seem to involve that. The legislation now provides that land, if it is going to remain undeveloped, can be placed in a land bank. This was one of the provisions of ANILCA passed in 1980. And the land would not be taxable in the land bank, but it couldn't be developed. So it would be land used for subsistence activities. The land can go into the land bank for 10 years and can be renewed for 5. It is, if it goes into the land bank, it is subject to either federal or state regulations because it must abut federal or state land on which there is a regulatory regime in place. Now, this is all that the land banking provisions are already in the law, but the only corporation that has been working on putting its land into a land bank is the Ganayu Corporation, which is the merged corporation of 4 villages on the Yukon River at Galena. And they found that the federal government wasn't ready with its own, it wasn't ready to negotiate about the land bank. The whole thing is on hold for the time being because the federal government hasn't decided exactly how it's going to approach the land bank arrangement. Bob Arnold, who is the Deputy Commissioner of Natural Resources in the state government, testified when the commission was in Juneau, and he said that the state was working out its own land banking legislation. So the land bank is, in a sense, a little bit up in the air. But it's certainly one of the ways of avoiding taxation. Now, it should be remembered, though, that if land goes into the land bank, The purpose is to avoid taxation. If the corporation is taken over through purchase of shares, then the people who take it over get the corporation and the land in the land bank, and when it comes out, they get the land. In other words, while it's in the land bank, it may not be taxable, but if your corporation's taken over in the meantime, then it's not your land any longer. Then you have and of course, if your corporation goes bankrupt, that land can be seized by any creditor. Then there is idea that many villages are promoting of having the corporations transfer their land to the IRA governments or the traditional governments in each village. The idea is that the land would then be held in common by those tribal entities, tribal governments, whatever you want to call them. And they, of course, can't be taken over by non-natives. Their resource, their land can't be taxed. And, of course, they don't have this problem of shareholding because land is simply transmitted from one generation to the next. The whole body of the tribe being the owners of the land, and the tribe keeps changing as people die and are born. Well, that's one other possibility. Then we had witnesses from Australia, where government is settling now with the Aboriginal people of Australia, or trying to settle with them. They have set up land trusts that hold the native lands, and the trusts are composed of native elders. They're not under the supervision or direction of the federal government. In Canada, there was a settlement reached this year, and it came into force last month, so it's hot off the press, so to speak. With the Eskimos of one of the northern regions of Canada, and they set up what they call the Inuit or Eskimo Trust, and everybody who is a member of that group receives a trust certificate at birth. It can't be alienated, can't be sold, can't be transferred, and when that person dies, the trust certificate is cancelled. And the Inuit Trust holds the land in perpetuity. The Inuit Trust cannot sell it, and the federal government has agreed that it will never impose a tax on it as long as it remains undeveloped. It is the condition you have in ANCSA, except it is in perpetuity. There was another settlement reached just 2 years ago by Congress with the Indians of Maine, and they settled for a large acreage in Maine, and the state of Maine agreed it would not tax their land. Now, this is 1982. Events have moved on since ANCSA, and Congress is now thinking in a way that's not quite the same. In Maine, they rejected the idea of the shareholding corporations. Every settlement reached since ANCSA by Native people, anywhere that we're aware of, has rejected your model of the shareholding corporation with the possibility of alienation of shares and loss of the land. And that's, in a sense, the problem you face, because everybody keeps trying to change these corporations so they can do the things you want them to do, but you keep running up against the ordinary notions about what corporations are supposed to do and the law about corporate activity, and even the Constitution, because there is a real problem with the proposals that have been advanced to issue shares to the children born since 1971. because corporations, if they issue shares to the children, will be diluting the shares of the existing shareholders, and all you would need might be one dissident shareholder to bring a lawsuit on the basis that this was in violation of the Fifth Amendment, so on and so forth. Lawsuits are a way of life in Alaska, and you might be inviting such action. There are all of those possibilities. We have commissioned. Well, we are holding roundtable discussions in Anchorage starting next month, in October on subsistence, in November on 1991, and we've asked experts from the Lower 48 and from other countries to come and to look at the AFN's proposals. They're making proposals designed to deal with ANCSA within the present structure. That is, when you come out the other end, you'd still have corporations. You'd still have shares, there'd be limitations and restrictions, but it would be recognizably the same setup that you've got now. That's fine, and we would like to see how those proposals stand up under very, you know, close scrutiny. Then in December, we've asked Professor Ralph Johnson, who's one of the leading authorities on Native land and governance in the United States, to prepare new proposals, new approaches to this whole thing. And he's working on that. And David Case, who is counsel to our commission, will be preparing proposals for Alaska as well. We think if you people are going to sort this out, you have to take a look at the whole range of possibilities, even if they take you beyond the kind of corporate structures you've got now. There's no point in my coming in and looking at this if I just look at it through a narrow basis, as if ANCSA was the beginning and the end. ANCSA is unique, and nobody else has got anything like it. And apparently nobody else wants anything quite like it. You received the 44 million acres in 1971, and in 1991 the trick is going to be to hang on to it. And that's really what ANCSA is about. And so all of those possibilities, I think, should be canvassed so that you really do make the soundest choices in the. But there's all kinds of these possibilities. Now, I mentioned the difficulties with the land bank. Let me say at once that the people who put forward the idea of transferring all the land to the IRA governments or the traditional councils or the tribal councils, I have to face the fact that the Secretary of Interior, Mr. Clark, Judge Clark, when he came with President Reagan to Alaska in April to meet the Pope, made a speech in which he said he would not accept in trust transfers of corporate land, Native corporate land, to the traditional IRA governments. That precipitated a whole range of possibilities, including a lawsuit requiring them to accept those lands in trust. See, the Secretary of Interior holds just about all native land in the Lower 48 in trust. In Canada, the equivalent person in the federal government holds practically all native land in trust. That is that assures immunity from taxation. But what we're looking into is, are there other ways of assuring immunity from taxation? So It's sort of a fascinating puzzle, isn't it? Or a maze, you know, where you go in and you kind of wonder when or how to get out. I think that if people decide what it is they want to do and take a hard look at how to get there, I think it can be sorted out. It's my view, and I've already said this, that it may be there should be a... You see, the remarkable thing about this is that in 1971, you had all kinds of different people brought under the same umbrella. Hanks applied to all Native peoples in the state of Alaska, of every race, of every condition. In other countries, those settlements have been worked out with each group of people separately. For instance, in northern Canada, settlements are being worked out with the various groups of Inuit, with the various groups of Indians. In Australia, it's being done like that, and in the lower 48, it's done that way. There's no other settlement that where a vast area was settled by act of Congress, and it said everybody has the same thing. Everybody gets a village corporation, a regional corporation, and so on. So what I'm driving at is that maybe next time around there should be a range of options for people. What is suitable to you here in Sand Point may not be what people in Anaktuvuk Pass think suits them. And some might want IRA governments to hold their land in common. Others might want to stick with the corporate system. Others might want a form of trust that is not in any way under the supervision of or subject to the veto of the Secretary of Interior. I don't know, but I really think that the whole range of possibilities has to be examined. In the main settlement, the tribal governments, to show you how flexible things can be if people really want to work at it, Congress and the government of the state of Maine and the Native people agreed that their IRA governments would be tribally recognized bodies under federal law and municipal bodies, local recognized local governments under state law, all at the same time. Until they did it, nobody thought it could be done, but they just did it, and then everybody realized it could be done. I don't know whether Mary went through all of these possibilities, but they're ones that at Barrow we had a representative of the Eskimos in the Western Arctic region of Canada come over and talk about the settlement they have. The Indians of the Yukon Territory in Canada are just now, they've reached a settlement and they're voting on it. Well, they voted against it. They had an elaborate procedure for ratifying that. Their leaders worked out the settlement with the government. They had an elaborate procedure for ratifying it, and it is that of the 12 groups of Indians in the territory, 10 have to vote for it, or it doesn't come into force at all. And only 8 voted for it. So it is a dead letter, but the it is now being renegotiated. The interesting thing is that this is happening all over the place. You people were the pioneers back in 1971, and you broke the logjam, and everybody has, in a sense, benefited from some of the things about your settlement that haven't worked out all that well, that it appears even you aren't happy with today. And now, in a sense, the wheel is coming full circle, and Alaska Natives may be in a position to say, look, we need to have this thing overhauled.
Well, Well, we talked about everything, but what's going to happen in, say, 75 years from now? The youngest Aleut stockholder will be in the age between 85 and 95, and we don't expect them to live much longer than that, even though they are Aleuts.
Well,
so what's going to happen? We can't take no children in was born after 1971. How do we know that the present stockholders now will turn the stock over to their children, or will they turn it over to one of their sons or daughters was married out in the lower 48, or, you know, what's going to happen to it? Will that be the end of the Native Land Claims Settlement Act, or have anybody ever figured out what's going to happen?
Well, that's a good point, sir. I've tried to think about that myself. What kind of a body of shareholders would you have in 50 years? If people, you mentioned 80 years or something, but let's...
75 years, yeah.
Okay.
There won't be many left of what's here now.
Well...
You take even the youngest ones. They'll be 85, 90 years old.
But their children and grandchildren will have received shares by inheritance. Now, about 20% of all the shares that are willed or, you know, that people leave to their children or leave to others if they don't have any children, about 20 to 25% of those shares go to people who aren't qualified to be enrolled as shareholders. They go to non-natives, and they don't have the right to vote under the Act. But the other thing about that is, right now, or back in 1971 when you all got shares, every living person had the same interest in the land. That is, you all had 100 shares. Now, if you have 10 children, you leave your 100 shares to them, each has 10 shares. If your neighbor has one child, leaves his 100 shares to his one child, his child has 100 shares. So in the second generation, you get unequal shareholding. In the next generation, it becomes even more unequal. And that's a question of principle.